Hi, I'm Tara, and welcome to Let's Do Books. I am excited because this week, K.D. Williamson is back. She is the author of the popular Cops and Docs series, and her latest book is Big Girl Pill. It's awesome. It's out everywhere from Dirt Road Books, and I highly recommend you go and get it because I loved it. Welcome, K.D.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So, you are here today so we can fangirl about an author that we both like. And since this episode was your idea, can you kick us off by saying who it is and why you thought we should fangirl about her?
Megan O'Brien. She is, I don't read a lot, but when I do, I have my top few that, you know, I'm really into. But she's an author who, whenever she comes out with a new book, I run to get it. I have a tendency to stick with the audiobooks because they're easier for me to get into, you know, driving around or being at home and stuff like that, rather than sitting down to read. So, but she is amongst one of my favorites.
So what was the first book that you read by her?
Wild was actually, I think it was a recommendation by you, as a matter of fact. I think you recommended it, if I remember correctly.
Maybe. Was it when we did it as a book club pick in the Lesbian Review?
Maybe, because I ended up listening to the audiobook. And I remember us talking, and you were like, oh, you should not do that and have to, you know, be out and about and stuff like that. So, but I was like, oh, I'm going to give it a try. And it's like it. I started listening, and yes, because I remember we were talking about the narrator, and you were telling me, oh, she has a great voice, you know. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll give it a try. I wasn't that much into audiobooks, but Wild was the first one I listened to, I guess you could say, and it sucked me in. I didn't think I would be into the insta love type thing. You know, I didn't think I would be, but sometimes it's more authentic in our community than, say, 200 pages and then there's a kiss. I mean, you know, so, but just the way she wrote it, the characters, the vulnerability, you know, with the characters and everything, and how they mesh, it grabbed me and pulled me in. And I think I listened to it in like 2 days or something like that.
And do you typically like paranormal romances? Because this is one that, like, it is not like a regular contemporary romance. And actually, it's a thriller, too.
It is. I didn't think I would. My first book was actually like a paranormal romance. My very first book. And it was a vampire thing, you know, and all this stuff. So I was like, you know, it's a little different. But I had never really read anything like that. Now, I'm in a fantasy, you know, as far as reading. I've always loved the fantasy novels, you know, sci-fi and all this stuff. And so it was a surprise that I was able to get into something like that, because it's so far from the norm of what is usually out there that I was like, But I think it helped that she started off with the human side, started really going into the human side before kind of exploring all the other stuff.
Yeah. My first Megan O'Brien, this is kind of embarrassing. I can't remember exactly which one it is, but I know for sure which one of two.
Okay.
It was either The Night Off or 13 Hours.
Uh-huh.
I think it was The Night Off, though, because I remember it was when I first discovered Lesfic, and I was trying to find more because I didn't really know how to find it. There was this list that was on Jezebel. It had been, like, reprinted from an Autostraddle article, and it was this person that was just like, the 10 lesbian romances on my Kindle. And so I was reading some of them, and I read, like, that's how I found, like, Radcliffe and Carson Tate. Like, it wasn't just Bold Strokes books, but it was, like, fairly Bold Strokes books heavy, which kind of makes sense too, because it was, I'm trying to think what year it was. It was probably 2010, 2011. And so I was looking for more, and I knew that I liked the ones by Bold Strokes. So I was looking for more Bold Strokes, which led me to, like, the Goldies lists. Like, for people who are listening, that's the annual awards that the Golden Crown Literary Society puts out. And Megan O'Brien, unsurprisingly, wins a lot of Goldies for erotica. And so I get the night off.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of her books have won Goldies.
Okay.
And so the thing with the night off is it opens with an abduction. And it's like, what is this? And then you find out that it's this woman who has an abduction fantasy. And so she's paid for this, like, high-end escort to execute it. And it's just so good. And I don't think I ever would have thought, like, I knew I liked reading erotic romance and erotic books, but, like, there is so much sex in that book.
Like, it is, and it starts off edgy. I mean, so it's not, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, there's, you know, a fetish for everyone. I mean, you know, not to shame or anything like that. But to me, that one started off atypically, you know, and I think that's why a lot of people have a problem with her stuff, because it's atypical. I mean, you know, it's not already like, oh, it has too much of this in it. Well, it is erotic romance. Mm-hmm. So, but I like that she does things a little differently. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's tropes in every lesbian novel, you know, no matter what it is, you know. It's all about how you explore those tropes and make them your own and make them stand out and make people want to glom onto it, so to speak. But I think she does a really good job with that.
Oh, yeah. The thing that I think is interesting with both of those books is that probably more than the first quarter, maybe even more than the first third of both of those books is basically like sex scene.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it works because this is the segue into let's talk about her sex scenes. The thing that I find really interesting is how they truly do propel not only story growth, but they also propel relationship growth and in some cases even character growth.
I agree totally with that. And again, I think that's what people miss and don't. And I think if I like careful readers, I like to call them careful readers, who kind of soak in, you know, all the nuance and all that stuff in a novel, as opposed to just reading surface level and going like, okay, well, that was just, oh, what was that? I mean, you know, so careful readers will get that, such as, you know, with each scene, and they're so different. It's like she doesn't write the same ones, but the level of intimacy grows with each one, and the characters get closer. And it's like, I remember, to jump ship a little bit, I remember with the sex therapist next door.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I remember reading some reviews on Goodreads, which I know I'm supposed to stay away from, but you know, I do my own reviews for other books too. So I was reading some of the reviews for that one, and I remember one, it kind of stuck out to me. And she was like, this whole book, and they didn't go out on a date until the very end?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, yeah, but you know.
Did you miss the point of the whole book?
Yeah, yeah, that was the whole point, to break down all those walls so they could get to there. Or, you know, so it was just like, woo, went right over her head. And I was just like, wow, how did you miss that?
I know. You know. The other thing that I loved about The Sex Therapist Next Door, I mean, I've read all of her books. I had to think about that for some reason, but I have read all of her books. I think The Sex Therapist Next Door is probably the most masterful of her erotic romances. And I think it really comes down to how she writes the sex scenes, because there is only ever exactly as much as is needed to accomplish something. So in some cases, so we're not going to see like the lead up to sex and then all the sex and then the aftermath necessarily. Sometimes we enter like mid scene, like they're in the middle of something. Sometimes the sex has already happened. We're not actually going to see that. And the premise for people who don't know is that Diana is a sex therapist who has a hands-on class that people can come to with their partner to learn basically how to have better sex with their partner. And her the person who usually works with her is not available due to an injury and isn't going to be available for a while because it's quite a bad injury. So she either needs to cancel all of her classes or she needs to find somebody else. And so she takes a risk and she goes next door to her neighbor who she knows is gay and who she knows has a lot of sex with a lot of different people and is like, is there any chance? Please, please, could you come do this? And so most of their sex that we see is actually in a group setting in front of other people.
It is. That's what I was talking about, the edginess. I mean, that's not something, again, we're talking about atypical. That's not something you see every day. I mean, you know, it's just like, and to me that added, it should have, if it was anybody else writing it, it would have taken away from their experience. But for some reason, it was able to add to it, if you ask me.
Yes.
And make it more powerful, so to speak.
Yes. I also love how she writes about sex work because, and I am not going to name, I'm not going to name names, but I have seen other authors write about sex workers and we see words like whore and hooker and harlot and all these things being thrown around. And whenever I've seen Megan O'Brien do it, and the two that really spring to mind are The Night Off and The Sex Therapist Next Door, it is very clear that sex work is real work. It is not work to be devalued. It is not something to be ashamed of.
Exactly. Yeah.
It just makes my heart so happy.
I know. It's just like what she took with the, you know, The Night Off, she took something we have been socialized to believe that is, you know, horrid and oh my God, people should not do that. And what's wrong with you that you do things like that, and made it normal. I mean, you know, it was about a woman falling in love. You know, that's what it was about. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, kudos. It's just the way she does things. It's just like, you know, I would love to be in her head when she maps things out. I mean, I don't even know, does she outline and, you know, or does she, you know, does she do like me and fly by the seat of her pants? You know? So I would love to just be in her head to see her process and how she kind of molds everything and fits it all into, I don't know, I wouldn't call it a nutshell, but it's just like this elaborate design that unfolds as you read it, you know. It's like a little bit at a time and it just gradually unfolds. It's almost like a going from like a larvae to a butterfly type thing, you know? Yeah.
So what about her characters? What do you think makes them special? And are there any that really stand out for you?
Like I said, between when I say the first book, like I said, was wild. It was something in that book about the vulnerability of the characters. Usually in lesfic, you have one vulnerable character and one ice queen or hard edge, you know what I'm saying? Hard edge character. And, you know, the vulnerable character teaches the ice queen or whatever to be vulnerable and, you know, and all that stuff. She starts off with two very extremely vulnerable characters who find each other. And to me, that was masterful as well. And who kind of grow into, you know, like these different women. I mean, Celine becomes like a hero of sorts. So it's just like, and you know, the other, she becomes like, I want to say, she starts standing up for herself, you know, she gains confidence and all this stuff. And to me, reading that and seeing that whole book is about transformation.
Yeah.
You know, one way or another. So I like the way she did that. And even in, she does the same thing, a little bit similar in The Sex Therapist Next Door. Now, Diana seems like an ice queen, but she really isn't. You know, to me, I don't see her as one at all. I see her as she's vulnerable. And Jude chips away and exposes that vulnerability, you know, a little bit at a time. I guess I don't see her as the typical, you know, ice queen. I know probably a lot of people would, but I think she starts off as damaged and vulnerable. And that's why she pushes her away.
She is guarded.
Yeah.
Super guarded.
She is, yeah.
And she's kind of an asshole.
She's very, yeah. And you know, it reminds me of, did you ever read those Harlequin romance books when you were younger?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, a lot of
them. You remember, because I remember I read them as a teenager. And the formula was, okay, you had this meek woman and this asshole guy. And the asshole guy would sometimes mistreat the meek woman. And all of a sudden she was in love with the asshole guy. And you're like, well, how the fuck did she fall in love with you treating her like that? You know, and it's just like, and it reminded me that a little bit because my God, some of the stuff she did was just so hurtful.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I mean, when Jude just asked for the smallest of concession, you know, she would just kind of leave her there high and dry, so to speak. So, I mean, yeah. So she was, yeah.
So she true. Was
something else. But I like how after those points, when she was at her, and she found herself at her lowest when she did things like that. Mm-hmm. And she was able to see. The good thing was that she was able to see, you know, okay, that was awful. You know, eventually she was able to see that was awful. I shouldn't have done that, you know, whatever. So I like that about her. But yeah, she was an asshole. She really was. Yep.
Thank you for being an awesome listener and supporting Tilt, the channel that brings you all the podcasts you want to hear. You're listening to Tilt. Find more podcasts on thelesbiantalkshow.com.
I think one of my favorite characters of hers is Alice from Camp Rewind. Did you ever read that one?
I did. Yes.
I really liked that one. And I think it was the first time that I read a character that has anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that came when I was just starting to figure out that I have it, which now that I've fully accepted it, I find it hilarious because when I look back on my whole life, it's like, there are behaviors I had as a child that were informed by having undiagnosed anxiety. But to be able to read a character and see what she goes through, even though I would say mine has never been as bad as Alice's was. Yeah, because I mean, hers, it really held her back.
It was almost like for her to branch out and do the camp, it was almost like she was close to being agoraphobic.
Yes.
You know, I think she was probably a couple of steps away from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah. But I thought, you know, as somebody in the mental health field who deals with, you know, kids and, you know, and I've seen the results of anxiety. It was pretty spot on. I mean, you know, the way they had her tackle her rational and irrational fears and, you know, and how, what was the other character's name? What was,
Rosa. Rosa.
Yeah. And how she helped her kind of get past those irrational fears and, you know, and see and kind of break her open a little bit and see the good stuff that was around her. I thought that was well done. I thought, yeah.
And that was even like, as Rosa had her own shit that she was dealing with. Because
she did, like, yeah.
I remember writing my review for this book. And because Rosa was basically a victim of Gamergate. Like, there was a sex mm-hmm. tape that was leaked about her. And she was trying to rebuild kind of some of her life after that.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, she was doxxed. And it was all because she had critiqued a video game, which is very, like, that kind of stuff happened to people.
Yes, it does.
And I remember being afraid to use the word Gamergate because even just using the word sometimes would cause people to swarm you online. Yeah. And so the way, like, just that book for me was like a perfect bringing together like real life issues that were very pressing at the time.
Uh-huh.
with like, mm-hmm. yeah, mental, like looking at mental health issues and mm-hmm. bringing that into the character work, and how that was like, for Alice to build a relationship with Rosa was a really big deal.
It was. It really was. And that's, okay, you hit on another thing. Now, don't get paranormal romance aside. I like how Megan does what I would call it probably a layer of realism, mm-hmm. I think, that is more prominent with her stuff than some of the stuff you get, you know, reading other authors, like the mental health stuff, like the sex work stuff. Mm-hmm. It just, she turns it in to where it's validated. It's just like, it's mm-hmm. a typical, it makes it almost normal to seem like, okay, this is everyday stuff. And it adds just a deeper layer, you know, in my opinion, to her work.
Well, that was like, I don't know if you ever read Battle Scars, but that's her one book that is a contemporary romance. And one of the leads is an Army veteran with PTSD.
I've heard about that. I've not read it. I've seen it like on Amazon and stuff. I've not read it.
I don't think it did as well as her other books, probably because at that point people were expecting erotic romance, and it's not. But it's really, like, it was really lovely, and it was really quite sad at points. And I mean, I'm not a veteran and I don't have experience with PTSD related to, you know, going to war. So I can't speak to how well mm-hmm. it was done, but it's definitely a part of that character's emotional journey. And will they or won't they make it as a couple? Because can she accept,
mm-hmm.
you know, moving into a new life with this new person?
Mm-hmm.
So good.
I might have to go back here. Is there an audiobook for that one?
I don't know.
I have to look.
I think most of her books are available in audio now.
I think they are. I'll have to go back and look.
Yeah.
Because I think I have just about everything. I don't think 13 was an audiobook. 13 hours? Was it? Maybe it was. I'm
going to check. It is. I don't know who
it is.
Yeah, I don't know who Allison Haynes is. Maybe I have it.
Oh, I have to sign in. I forget I have a new phone. But yeah, I have a lot of her stuff and on Audible that I go back and, you know, listen to on occasion. Because she writes the type of books you have to go through it multiple times.
You got to go
because
back.
There's just something you catch each time that you probably missed before.
Battle Scars is available.
And an audio, who reads it?
Amanda Goodyear. I have no idea who that is, but hopefully she's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So all her audiobook, except for that one narrator I know we talked about, I won't say any names, that sounds childlike, that makes it kind of hard to enjoy. I think she read her best friend's sister and Can't Rewind.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of her best friend's sister.
I've not read that one.
What?
I haven't. I think, and I kept thinking I was, or that I was going to buy it, but I don't think I ever got around to it. But I remember you telling me that you liked it, so.
I don't even understand why you're talking to me right now when you could be reading this book.
Oh, see, I might have to get it then.
I mean, it's the narrator that you didn't like, so maybe don't get it in audio, but if you if you can, get it in print, because the premise is a character falls for her best friend's sister. I don't know what else you need to know. So she's kind of like nerdy and runs a tech company, but she's on like the programming side of the business. Like, I think they're a startup.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? I may already have it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've not listened to it. I think I have it in audiobook already, and I've not listened to it. I have to go back and look at my old stuff, because I remember it starts off. Doesn't that start off with masturbation?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I think I have it.
I'm not sure. I haven't read it in a while, but like, so the best friend's sister.
Uh-huh.
Wait, is that how it works? I'm trying to remember if I'm getting the relationships right, because again, I haven't read it in a little bit. But anyway, the other lead that she falls for is this, like, gorgeous, slightly older butch who's, like, a photographer who's been around the world and has banged supermodels and whatever. But, like, you know, actually, like, you know, she likes the nerdy girl. So it's very cute, but it's also, like, super hot.
Oh, okay. So, okay. Well, when I, hopefully my mood will improve and I'll be able to, you know, give it a try. Because, you know, you would think doing that with everything that's happened, if that hadn't happened, you know, I probably would have been reading Truth and Measure and all that stuff again. Oh, but
man.
Can sidebar.
Mm-hmm.
You know she's busy writing that, right?
I do. Okay, so people who don't understand what we're talking about right now, Truth and Measure is one of the greatest fanfics of all time, and I will fight anyone who wants to argue me on that. Yes. It is a fanfic about Miranda and Andy from Devil Wears Prada, and if you look on Archive of Our Own, it has the most kudos of any other fanfic in that fandom, and understandably so. It is like almost 300,000 words.
Oh my god! And she's breaking it into two books.
Yeah,
she's
So she's rewriting it as original fiction, breaking it into two books. Which I have said I will not read the first book until the second book is out. You can't make me. That's not fair.
Well, you know what? But I think that because, you know, she'll probably ask for them or probably do like they did Blurred Lines and Crossing Lines and have the first part come out. And then a couple of months later, the second book.
OK, fine. But I might ask them to sneak me the second book while I'm reading the first book.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I mean, because, you know, because it's a complete work. So and they're splitting it down the middle. So it will make sense to capitalize on things, you know, and start the iron wires hot, so to speak. You know, so.
I know we're going to continue this. We're going to continue this sidebar in our Megan and Brian appreciation to have a little bit of Rosalind Sinclair appreciation. Did you read The X Ingredient?
Yes. Yes, loved it. It to me, and Rosalind needs to know this is the highest form of flattery. It was like the best of Megan O'Brien, kind of wrapped in with a little extra something, you know, to it. Mm-hmm. Because it had find a word to describe it. It was similar to reading one of Megan O'Brien's books, but it had a little something different in it. And I can't exactly put my finger on what it was, but
I think it was that it was
got more romantic as it went on. Maybe that was the, that could be it.
So did you read both the fanfic and the original fic?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So for people who are listening, Rosalind Sinclair, in her fanfic, goes by Telenu, and she wrote a lot in the Devil Wears Prada fandom, and I really did enjoy most of it. And The X Ingredient was probably my second favorite. And the premise there was that Miranda's assistants, there was kind of this expectation that they go down on her. That's just for whatever reason, because it's fanfic and improbable things happen in fanfic all the time.
It was just required, you know, each one was trained by the prom previous to, you know, this is what you do.
Right.
And, you know, you don't make a big deal out of it. You just go in there, you get it over with, and, you know.
And so Emily gives Andy the heads up that she has to do this, and Andy is like, what the fuck? And then she's like, no. If I'm going to do this, I'm going to blow her mind. I'm going to make it so good. I'm going to be the best at this. And she is the best at this. And it's kind of, it ends up being Miranda's undoing.
We call that in the Black community, they don't use these words in it. She got turned out, in other words. Yeah. Nobody says that anymore. But when I was a teenager, that used to be, you know, a big thing. But yeah, that's what happened to her, you know. So.
And so the book got picked up because Rosalind is with Ilva Publishing. And so they picked up The Lily and the Crown, which is also great if you like sci-fi romance with lesbian space pirates. Yeah, you want lesbian space pirates? Go read The Lily and the Crown. And then they picked up Truth and Measure, which she's working on and is not out yet, and The X Ingredient. And I have to admit, I wondered, how the hell is this going to work? because once you take it out of fanfic and put it kind of into the real mm-hmm. world, that is such mm-hmm. an ethically sketchy situation. And then Me Too exploded. And I wondered again, how in the world is this going to
work? But she did it. She kind of avoided the whole kind of sketchy, kind of like mm-hmm. my boss is forcing me to do this type thing. Mm-mm. She completely avoided it. And somehow it still embodied the fanfic. I mean, still somehow she was able to get that message of this one woman is, you know, okay, I have feelings, but I'm going to be guarded and it's just going to be sex no matter what, mm-hmm. you know? So, which was in essence what was going on in the X and Gritty at the fanfic, you know? So kept that essence and kind of ran with it. So we see like each scene again, you know, a little bit like Megan O'Brien tearing down those walls, each scene growing more intimate and, you know, them getting closer and, you know, closer. So to me, there's some similarities between, you know, how, you know, both of them write. I think Roslyn has a little bit more of a sense of humor than Megan O'Brien does, but I think they have a similar style in the way they do erotica, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So to get back to Megan O'Brien and to cap this off, I think I know the answer to this now based on how you started this, but do you have a favorite book? Why?
I don't know. I think out of all the books I've read, and like I said earlier before we started recording, I was voracious after that point. I was like, oh my God, I have to read, you know, everything I can get or listen to everything I can get my hands on from this writer. But I think it's the inherent vulnerability of both of those characters that kind of drew me in. And that's what made the difference for me. Like I said, I don't read a lot. I'm very selective. I don't like typical tropey, you know, sweetie type things. That's not my thing at all. I can't handle that. You know, it's just like, it kind of makes my teeth hurt. She didn't make my teeth hurt. You know, although there was a sweetness to it, it was an inherent sweetness. It wasn't cloying, you know. And to me, it was a book about transformation. That was the biggest thing. And maybe at that time when I read it, I needed something like that, you know. She also, we have a tendency, I think, as writers and readers as well, you know, sometimes people start one way in a book, and by the end, there's somebody completely different. She didn't do that because I don't think that's realistic. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's realistic. I think what she did with both of those characters is that they made each other better and they were stronger together, you know? So, and even, spoiler alert, you know, even when they went through the tropey typical breakup or whatever, they were still growing, you know, during that time period, which I think is integral to the story. And I think that's what did it for me. It just, in that time when I listened to it, it just grabbed hold of me. And it was so different from some of the other stuff I had read to that point that it just immediately endeared me to it.
I love it. I, for years, said The Night Off was my favorite, but I kind of think it's The Sex Therapist Next Door now. Like, it's just so well done. The character work is so well done. Mm-hmm. The sex work is sex. Well, I suppose the sex work as well as the sex scenes is so masterfully written.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Since you're talking about it, do you think the aspect of voyeurism kind of lent into the heat of the sex scenes?
Definitely. Because I mean, there was also like in some scenes, like we weren't getting a lot about the other people in the room, but it was very clear like there were other people in the room who were watching them, who were also having sex, and like that was super
Yeah. That, yeah, I thought so.
A plus.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me. Where can people find you if they want to connect with you?
You can find me on Twitter at RizzlesLover72, I believe. I'm on Facebook, Katie Williamson Author, and I do have a website, katiewilliamson.org. So, yeah.
Should we warn them that sometimes on your Facebook you share some of the most offensive food posts available to man?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I need to get, yeah, on my hot sauce tasting things, which I need to get back to. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thank you.
This was great. Fun. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm Tara, and you've been listening to Les Do Books. You can email me at tara@thelesbianreview.com with your questions or comments. If you're an author who's interested in joining me on the show to talk about the lesfic you love or the trends that have you interested, please let me know. If you've enjoyed this episode, please check out the show notes where you'll find a Patreon link for Tilt or visit patreon.com/thelesbiantalkshow. Our patrons get exclusive content like bonus podcasts that no one else gets access to. To find this and many other great shows, all you need to do is search for Tilt, spelled T-L-T, on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, or Spotify.